This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Wow, I have a really special book today, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper an author who, well, she's with National Geographic, and everybody knows that National Geographic's books are my favorite. I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Kelly Hargrave. Hi.
Hi, Joy. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm so excited to dive into sharks.
Oh, well, you know, I live here in Clearwater. It just, I look at the beach all day long, and so I'm thinking of sharks. And when I got this book, of course, it is a Nat Geo book, and it is so beautiful. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh, yes. We were so excited to see all of the photos come together in such a fun way. There is such a big variety of sharks and can't get enough shark stuff, which did go on sale earlier this week, which is really exciting. I really think that we're showing such a great variety that's going to blow kids' minds.
It really will. You know, I was a homeschool mom for 20 years, and so this is the kind of book I wish I had had at the time. I did, of course, use National Geographic books as part of my curriculum as a homeschool mom. Those were always our go-to books because I could always get the facts and I could get the kids interested in any subject if I had a Nat Geo book. But this one, it's like a dream come true.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice of you to say. Yeah, I mean, we have such an incredible team at National Geographic working together, writers, editors, fact-checkers. Obviously, for this book, we touched base with a lot of shark specialists, which we featured some of their hands-on experience with sharks in the actual book. But, you know, it's so much more than beyond just the fun facts and the cool stories. We also have shark jokes and fun activities and just like a couple of things throughout the book that can really help engage kids with what we're trying to communicate about sharks is that there's so much beyond the surface of what we all think about sharks. They have so many cool characteristics. There's such a variety, and each of them has something unique to offer. So that's what we're trying to bring to the surface here.
Well, you certainly have. And the name of the book is Can't Get Enough Shark Stuff. And that is so true. Isn't it amazing how sharks just grab your interest and you always want to know more about them?
Absolutely. I think it's those jaws, you know, whenever you see the jaws, you just can't turn away and you just got to know more. Like, how can a creature on Earth exist and look like this, you know? And I think that's what's really interesting for kids is that, you know, the underwater and the ocean world is so different than what we have on land. To see something like a shark actually exist on Earth, I mean, it just piques your interest, you know? You got to know more. And then we all kind of get this same shark in our head. I think we all think about the great whites. And so to know that there's over 500 different species in the ocean to learn about, I think that's really, really exciting.
Now, how many species are they? Do they know?
Yeah, there's over 500 species, and surprisingly, you know, we're still finding new species. There's one that was found within the last decade that's really cool. It's actually called the American pocket shark. And, you know, most people wouldn't expect it is a shark, and it is the size of something that would technically be able to fit in your pocket. Obviously, you don't want a shark in your pocket. We want it to be in the water. But it is a small shark, and it comes with some really cool superpowers. It can actually extract this goo from it, and it uses that to, it actually glows too, so got to throw that in there. But this glowing goo, and they use that possibly to communicate to other sharks, but also to attract and lure in prey, because prey will think, oh, what's that glow over there? I think it might be food for me. Lo and behold, there's a shark somewhere behind there pouncing on them once they come into the goo. So it's really interesting stuff. We're still finding out lots of new facts and cool things about sharks, and we're still finding new sharks. So there's lots to dive into here.
Now, have you been down with the sharks? Have you been in one of those cages and gotten up close and personal?
Oh, gosh, no. I have never done that. I have never been in a shark cage. But we do cover some of that technology and some of that diving material that shark specialists use to be able to safely be able to view sharks and swim with them and get those amazing pictures that we have throughout the book. And I do want to point out, too, that people can swim with whale sharks, which is awesome because whale sharks are one of the most, they're the biggest shark, but they also eat the tiniest of creatures like shrimp and krill and just tiny things. And they're known as a gentle giant. So they've never attacked a human, and they're very docile creatures. So that's one of those sharks that you can actually swim with and not have to be in a cage. You know, you can be out in the environment and just swimming around. And one of the places to do that is the Great Barrier Reef, which is really neat.
Well, of course, here in the Florida, the Gulf of Mexico, we have sharks. And I've been out there on fishing boats for the day, and we've seen them. And I always like, okay, I don't want to fall in.
Yes, keep your distance, right? There really aren't that many shark attacks that happen each year, which is great. People kind of have this idea that all sharks are really, really dangerous. But because there's so many species, there's a lot of different smaller ones that we never even see. There are a lot that live in the deep sea ocean that we're still learning about. A lot of them are not known for attacking humans. There's only a couple, and it only happens seldom throughout the year. And only 1 to 5 deaths happen each year from sharks around the world. So very small considering how many humans we have on this earth. And actually, humans tend to kill sharks more often than sharks kill humans, which is bad, you know, from things like overfishing and just getting bycatch of sharks and stuff. So we really, you know, we're trying to put it out there that sharks aren't that dangerous. We're not part of their natural diet. If we ever see them, they're usually hunting something else. Which is, you know, makes me feel better.
It's certainly
feel over there.
It certainly does. When you were doing this book, you had this marvelous collection of photographs from all of the Nat Geo photographers who have for years been taking photographs of sharks and everything in the ocean, and it was probably a big decision which photos to pick.
Gosh, yes. I mean, we're so lucky that we have such a wealth of wonderful photographers and people that work with us and specialists around the globe. It really kind of sets our books apart from other books. And you really get to see the variety of sharks in this book. You know, some of my favorites that the kids might not be as aware of, you know, like the Wobbegong shark, this flat looking shark that lays on the bottom of the surface and it kind of looks like a rug. And it'll blend in with the ocean floor and then pounce on fish, unexpected fish that kind of swim over it. That's just one of the sharks, you know, goblin sharks, frilled sharks. There are so many sharks that we don't talk about. And so that's what I'm really excited for kids to flip through this book and see these amazing pictures that have been brought to us from these amazing photographers. Be like, oh my gosh, I need to read more about this. What is this crazy looking thing? So you think the great white looks crazy, you're going to look through this book and be like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that these things even existed. And they come with cool superpowers.
Exactly. And the blue shark, isn't the blue shark gorgeous?
Oh, I think that might be the cutest shark. It's so cool. And it actually, the blue shark is technically the only blue shark. You know, we always think of like when we're coloring sharks and stuff, we always use blue to color them. But the blue shark is named because it really is. It has blue skin, and it's one of the only, if not the only, blue shark in the ocean, which is really cool. It's a fun shark too. It likes to use its fins to surf on current so that it can help regulate its energy and be able to migrate farther, which is really neat. So some cool facts about the blue shark in the book as well.
And then of course the ugliest one is this tasseled wobbegong. What is that thing?
Yes. So the tasseled wobbegong, it's just one of the wobbegong sharks, and the tasseled one actually has these tassels on it. But again, like that looks like a rug, but they use it because it kind of looks like coral. So it will attract other fish thinking that the tassels on it are coral, only to see that it's an actual shark. So they use that to lure in prey, which is really neat. You know, sharks have been on the planet for over 400 million years. So with that time, they've evolved to have all of these amazing hunting tactics. And that's just one of them that the tasseled wobbegong has. It also has this really flat teeth compared to other sharks. And they use that teeth to bite down on the prey. And they're known for holding onto prey sometimes for days at a time until the prey actually just gives in and, you know, dies. So that's some perseverance to hold on to some prey for a couple of days until it just kind of gives in.
Well, it freaked me out to see that shark.
I know. It looks like your living room's coming alive seeing that shark, right? Like a rug.
Exactly. You know, when they were making all those horror movies back in the 60s, they should have done this one. I know they did The Tarantula, which I used that film to scare my poor little brother nearly to death. But boy, oh boy, if he would have seen this Tassel Wobegong, oh, he'd still be having nightmares.
There are a couple sharks like that as well in the book, and I think it's surprising, but it's also fun to know, hey, those exist, and I don't have to go, you know, if I don't want to be near them, I don't have to go in the water, you know. That's the nice thing about having land versus water.
Exactly.
You don't have to go in if you don't want to.
And one of the ones that I think it's just so, well, cool looking is that dwarf lantern shark. I like the sort of sleekness of it.
Oh, yeah, that is a really cool shark. And it's actually, as of right now, the smallest shark that's in the ocean. So it's the length of a number two pencil. If you can imagine, you can actually, you know, rest that shark in a human hand. You know, that's how small it is. And so when we think of sharks, we don't think of sharks that small. And so that's why that's so incredible, because it just kind of looks like a fish, but it's a shark. It comes with really cool shark characteristics. It actually has these spots on its belly that can light up. So they use that, kind of like the American pocket shark. It'll use the light on its stomach to help lure in prey when it's in deep, dark water. And that's all that fish can see, is those little bits of things that light up, thinking that it's food for them. And then the shark will pounce and eat it. But they also use that light when they're traveling closer to the surface of the water. Any predators that are looking up at it can't see it, because the light kind of blends in with the sunlight above. So it's really cool that it can use it to lure in prey, but it can also use it to protect itself and camouflage itself. So really small shark comes with really cool characteristics.
Well, I tell you this, you know, this book will give hours and hours of fun. Definitely for the summer, I'm going to be really sponsoring quite a few events with children to get children to read. And this book, this is at the top of my list, because I know that kids will love this book and all of the everything you've put in here. You know, I think it's just so great. And let's also mention the person you worked with, Andrea Sellin, right?
Yes, she was the co-writer, so we worked really closely together to make sure that we're, you know, sifting through all the information and connecting with people to make sure we're bringing the coolest information to kids. You know, we've sifted through all the hard stuff to really find those standout facts and information that are really going to, you know, blow kids' minds and you know, get them excited about sharks.
Well, definitely. And you tried out all the jokes on each other. I love all the jokes. I think it's so cute. Everyone is, I'm sure the kids are going to have so much fun with it. The illustrations are great. All of the facts are wonderfully laid out, really easy to understand. And I have not really had a book like this where I'm sure that not only will the kids love it and the parents will love it, but it will be the kind of thing that I think will inspire kids to take an interest in conservation. Because when you see this, you want to make sure these animals just stay alive and that we keep the oceans clean and let them just have their fun, because they're great. It's just so much fun to look at them.
Oh, yes. Perfectly help balance each other out. You know, they have an effect on the ocean, but you know, what they're doing underneath there also has a greater effect on the planet. So we want to make sure, yes, that we're paying attention to them, we're educated on how awesome they are, so that we can spread the word on how to protect them and keep them in our lives.
Exactly. Well, I think you have done a great job, as always, for Nat Geo. All of you people working with Nat Geo are the luckiest people in the world, because you are doing something that you love and something that you know is going to be lasting. And really, as I was influenced from the time I was 7 years old, Nat Geo meant everything to me. It was my lifeline, really, to the world. And so I admire all of you who work for Nat Geo, and everybody, they should go to National Geographic Kids website. It is a wonderful website, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yes. We have even more animals. We have stuff on space and technology, all of the cool things that kids are interested in to be able to dive in and just, you know, get all those fun facts and interesting things to keep them reading and enjoying life in a new light.
Well, really, I am so honored that you were on the program today, Kelly Hargrave, and the name of the book is Can't Get Enough Shark Stuff, Fun Facts, Awesome Info, Cool Games, Silly Jokes, and More. And definitely just filled with the love of animals and the love of the ocean. You guys, you did a terrific job.
Thank you so much. I was so happy to be here and be able to talk about sharks. I mean, I'm obsessed with them now, so it's a joy to be able to be here and be part of National Geographic and spread the love of sharks.
Well, you've done a great job, and this is the kind of book that will really, really make a difference in a kid's life. So thank you so much for doing it, and thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Yeah, very happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Wow, what a beautiful book. I've spent at least 3 hours looking at the photographs in this book, and I actually should go around and start doing shark jokes. It's really a wonderful book for kids. And if you don't have a kid in your life, please, please get this book. Get a couple of these books and send it to either a children's hospital in your area or check out St. Jude's Shriners, get their address, and just you can order the book straight on Amazon or from Nat Geo's website and send it to a hospital, because the children in the hospital need books. They're very short of books right now. Because of COVID, they stopped sharing books, and I don't think they're still doing it. So they're short of books, and this book will give hours and hours of joy to a sick kid. So please get it. It's, again, Can't Get Enough Shark Stuff, and it's a beautiful book. And so cheap. Nat Geo books are always priced so low, and it's really great value for its money. Now, we're going to have a book buzz from Bria Burton. I am so happy that we have one of her very special book buzzes, and I'm going to make sure that as soon as I can, I'm going to have the author on. He is a local person, and we're going to have that happening sometime soon. But meanwhile, I want to play a book buzz from Bria Burton, and then we'll talk about some more stuff after we hear that and go to commercials.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in print, ebook, and audiobook, Electric Midnight by Nathan Van Koops. This is book 2 in the Paradox PI series, and book 3 can't arrive quick enough unless it could time travel. Now, let's download the book buzz. In the vein of futuristic noir detective stories with heavy doses of pulp, and where high-tech androids called synths roam, street-smart private detective Grayson Travers encounters a synth with a glitch, who winds up dead. Travers hits the streets of Port Nuongo, a Blade Runner-esque city on the Gulf of Mexico in Florida, following a lead from a coin the synth left behind. Soon, the TCID, a time travel authority, finds a reason to hassle Travers, despite his witty comebacks. With no reason to detain him, he's free for now, but his troubles with that organization escalate with every new piece of evidence he discovers, which includes a suspiciously convenient job offer from United Machine, the synth-making corporation who hires Travers to find the synth killer. When Travers needs a safe haven from all the heat and the underworld dregs that get their sights on him, his trusty time-traveling muscle car fitted with an AI named Waldo offers a ride to the Rose and Crown, a time-traveling inn that caters to clientele like Michelangelo and Samuel Clemens, aka Mark Twain. As Travers gets closer to discovering the truth, he realizes the killer might be closing in on him. This action-packed time travel mashup is a page-turning thrill ride with a likable hero, clever twists, and a richly imagined future. Author Nathan Van Koops lives in St. Petersburg, where he teaches writing and publishing classes with Keep St. Pete Lit, and has had a career in aviation for over 20 years. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and is my next guest here already? Okay, I'm just waiting for a call-in from Hollywood, and this is going to be fun because everybody knows that I love to talk to people from Hollywood, so he's going to be calling in a few minutes, and this is a fun book. It's called Monkey Business, and I'm waiting to talk to him, and he should be calling in a few minutes. Wow, it's going to be fun to talk to him. And I just wanted to mention that I was so thrilled that Bria Burton is back and up and running, and she did this wonderful, wonderful book buzz. She has such a wonderful voice, doesn't she? It's just, it has a little bit of mystery and very sci-fi, just perfect. So I am looking forward, as soon as I can, I'm going to have the author of Electric Midnight on, and we will be talking to him about his book. And again, I thank her very much for that book buzz. And I will have another book buzz on Tuesday from Devon Miller for our May book for children. As I mentioned earlier in my interview with Nat Geo, in June, I'm going to be talking a lot about children's books and books that I think would be just great to have for children during the summer reading programs. And I will have lots of recommendations. And if you have any recommendations of authors that you want me to invite on the program, let me know. Because one of the things that I really want to do this year, I'm going to have some children come into the studio to talk about the books that they like and why they like them. Because for me, reading is so important, and it's been something that I've discovered as I was homeschooling, that when we homeschooled kids, there would be days when I would do no lessons. There would be no lesson plans. It would simply be a book day. Read a book, take a book, and read it until you're absolutely, thrilled with the book. I would have my kids read any book they wanted. But then afterwards, I would say, where did the book take place? what happened, why did it happen? I would get them to analyze it. I would get them to write reports. And one of the most important things, of course, was always this question, where did it take place? We learned so much of geography and history simply by following sort of the lead. Where did a book take place? So we would make maps. I would have them read a book, and I would say, make a map of the town or the city or the country where the book took place. And all of these were lessons that taught them so many things, not just the reading, but the thinking, the process, understanding how people wrote books. And as they developed and understood, also then their interest in writing just blossomed. And my youngest son is just a brilliant writer, and he's doing fantastic work on many subjects, but he writes scientific works, but it's brilliant work. And again, this love of reading and writing, if you start it at a young age, that's why I'm one of the sad things for me, and I come from Detroit. I lived in Detroit as a child, and we had one of the best libraries. It was an unbelievable library, a McGregor Public Library, and it is still there. And it breaks my heart that they literally wrapped the place in plastic. They wrapped all the books on the shelves in plastic. They just went, saran wrap, industrial plastic, and wrapped the bookshelves and left the books there. And then they've been sitting there now for years. Of course, they've all rotted, and of course, the rats are eating them. And I never could understand why they did this. This is such, I think it's a criminal thing, what they did, because that library was so beautiful. And children should have this library available for them, and wherever they are, there should be libraries, and they should be opening more libraries in all areas of town, in underprivileged areas, because having a library, being able to read a great book, that is what, it can just change your entire life. I know that my life in a library as a child changed my life because of it. Everything I did, traveling, business, all of the work I did when I worked in Hollywood or when I work here now reading books, that all comes from those years that I was in a library. And so I really hope that this summer I will be able to work with several of the libraries, local libraries here, with reading programs. As I get all of these books from publishers, I get a lot of extra copies, and I'm going to be distributing them to reading groups at the libraries. And if you have a library group for children this summer, let me know. You can send me an email. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And if you have a library group in my area, I will be happy to talk to the children and to bring for the children books so that I can help spur on this love of reading. And meanwhile, I want to also say that during this past month or so, I've been getting a lot of emails from all of you talking about the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper and the Patsy Prize, which is a cash prize that any author who's been on Joy on Paper during this year will be eligible for next year. So I'm hoping that as I select the books that I'm going to be reviewing, the authors that I'm going to be talking to, I'm keeping track not just of how I feel about them, but about how you feel about them. So I hope that it will be something that we can all sort of work together so that we can come out with a more winners of the Patsy Prize next year. Because, again, I want to help, and these are for authors for their first book. So when I have an author on who's just written their first book, I will be able to have them and give them the Patsy Prize. So meanwhile, I'm waiting for my calling from California. I know nobody's calling. We don't know what happened to him. Anyway, we'll hope so. Meanwhile, I want to play, talking about the Patsy Prize, I want to play a song from Kevin Edwards. He was on the program, and he won the Patsy Prize for this year for his book, Kevin Turns Fear to Feet, a lovely children's book. Again, one of the books that I'm going to be talking about for the summer. So I hope that we're going to play that song because I love to inspire all of you, and we'll play Kevin's song.
Sometimes I feel like giving up and throwing in the towel. Sometimes I can't hardly face another day. I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can't even see my way. I ask the question, when things will ever change for me.
Okay, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Carlton Eastlake. And the name of the book is Monkey Business. Hello, Carlton. Carlton, where are you? Oh, boy. We had him for a minute. All right, we'll get him back. He's a little bit late, but we are going to keep trying because I love this book. I will tell you, it is funny. You know, it is about, of course, it is about a Hollywood writer. So I actually relate very well to this book and all the ups and downs of life for a Hollywood writer. It is a fascinating thing, and I'm just so happy. When I get a book about Hollywood, I always sort of get this momentary glimpse at what life was like there. And so I was always... I get a kick out of this book, and particularly because it is, you know, when I was there in Hollywood a long time ago, I met a lot of people that are in this, that are characters in this book, let me say. So it was lots of fun, and I'm hoping that Carlton, is Carlton on? Are we? I hope so. Because I really need him. I need a laugh. And I got a lot of laughs from this book. It is, the cover of this book is one of my favorites. It's just so clever. And I, you know, I don't know where he is. I hope he didn't sleep late. You know, we've had that problem before. We've had a couple of, I think we've had about three times where we, that's why I stopped calling people, because I said, you have to call us because, you know, you have to wake up. Is he on? Is Carlton on? Where's Carlton? This could be the next book. We could have the next book. Where's Carlton? We need to find, okay, hello, Carlton, are you there?
I am here. Hi.
Well, finally, Carlton, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I was afraid for a moment that you were just some five-star hotel, you know, this famous Carlton on Eastlake. And you're not real, but you're real. You are real.
I think we can blame AT&T. They're having troubles on the hill today.
Okay. Well, you know, and of course, it's also California, and you could be sleeping late. We've had that happen several times, including it was hard to get Debbie Reynolds on my program because she told me one day, she said, I told her what time the program was, and she said, but I'm not awake. I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds. That's why I threw that in, just, you know, to So, you know, I
never sleep.
Okay. That's good. Carlton, Carlton, Carlton. It's like Billy, 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 Willy, Willy, Willy in this book. You are clever. You are smart. What sometimes people don't understand, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let you do the talking because I don't have, you know, you lost a few minutes here. People don't realize how very smart script writers are because they look at you based on the scripts you've written. So many of them are so bad. But script writers actually are, I've always found, are very, very smart. We've read a lot. We know a lot. We've read a lot of books. We're usually historians and psychologists, and we're really smart people. Of course, then we have to put it all down on paper, and sometimes we don't get to use a lot of words. But you are smart, and I was happy that you got to throw in a lot of your smarts here. You know, I really appreciated all of the things that you threw in here, like Mao snuffing Lin Bao. How many times in a book does an author have a chance to throw that in? Say, look at me. I'm smart. Really, I am. I mean, don't judge me by those words, the characters. So tell us about tell us about this book. It's funny. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And of course it landed up also that the location was here in Florida in my backyard, and I've done location shooting here. So I know all about it.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned how maybe we're smarter than the scripts, because of course, the book really in part details the descending misery and suppressed rage of a screenwriter whose script is slowly being destroyed by his producers and made not only more dumb, but also more violent and despicable draft by draft.
I'm sorry, it makes me laugh. Just remembering.
Well, you know, you have to laugh or cry when that process happens. And you're creative like we are, and this machine is grinding up our material.
Oh, it does. Oh, it's, but you do have to laugh about it.
Oh, yes, you do. So, anyway, the book, I mean, for people who are listening to us, the book is about a screenwriter on location, TV writer on location in Florida. He's young, and he is being really oppressed and bullied by two very powerful executive producers. And they take him to when we first meet him, he is standing in the ruins of a fire that has destroyed a nightclub, and he is the prime suspect for the office. And he explains to us he got into this fix because two really horrible producers took him to that nightclub, a very high-end strip club, and try to humiliate him or bully him by hiring a dancer. But she let him off to a private room and told him that she is really an anthropologist searching for rational life. And then she started interviewing him about creativity and the role that fantasy plays in everyday life and the role that we play in the media and shaping people's lives. Asking about these really horrible producers. And so, of course, this screenwriter instantly falls in love with her. She is so smart. And it's some enchanted evening, you know. It's My Fair Lady. It's love at first sight. And then he begins to suspect as he tries to get her to reciprocate. And she gives him a reading list and starts doing things. He begins to suspect that she's staging events that seem natural, but actually are aimed and under her control and aimed at his producers and aimed at him to teach them some lessons that they need to learn. And that's the start of the book. How he gets out of it, you got to read the book.
I love it. I love it. You know, Sue Grafton once told, you know, Sue Grafton was, of course, was involved in briefly in script writing in Hollywood too,
and an amazing writer.
Oh yeah, and she said to me one time, "Oh gosh, did we really have to deal with these people?" But
well, you know, I mean, the problem in Hollywood is that I've used this metaphor before, but Hollywood is not the Olympics with the 100-meter dash, and you know, you start the stopwatch and it's objective. Hollywood is ice dancing; it's all subjective. Ultimately, there are audience numbers. But then even attributing who is responsible, you know, what worked and drew the audience or scared them away, is subjective. So people who are fast-talking con men who have a lust for power and the money that you can make in Hollywood very often infiltrate the process and make life terrible for everybody else. And so this book in part is about that, and of course in part about the miseries of really true and instant love at first sight and a lot else that I think we've all experienced that way.
Oh, it's clever. It's smart. You've done. I got such a kick out of so many things. I love that you've introduced this whole thing. You know, you're using big words.
Chairman Mao as the ultimate guy with power who manages to ruin everything, because Mao pretty much ruined the lives of a billion people and killed quite a few of them. But the personality is not much different than a bad producer on a show that has aggregated all this power to protect his ego and also to prey upon everybody else but actually not produce a workable show.
Well, of course, you've introduced this idea of limerence.
Yes.
Oh, I thought that's good. That's good.
That readers have, or even though the book launched this week, readers have already told me that reading about that has changed their life. About 75% of the population experiences limerence, which is that incapacitating, you know, preoccupation with hoping someone else loves you, that you will fall in love usually at first sight or very soon after meeting the person, and you're really fixated on them and cannot do your work, cannot lead the rest of your life. And the psychologist that coined the term, Dorothy Tenoff, when she surveyed this, because psychology cannot really deal with love, even today has a terrible problem dealing with it. When she surveyed the population, she found about 75% reported that they've been incapacitated that way. And people do not talk about it. They keep it private for the most part. And they certainly hide it from the person they're in love with. And yet it is the engine that you see in almost every love story, the engine that you certainly see on Broadway, and every classic Broadway song is written about. And so this guy is suffering from that as he pursues this very beautiful, very bright, and very mysterious woman who seems to change her name every week.
Well, you know, as I read that, I was thinking, now, I don't know if you'll make a fortune from the book, but you could, you know, come out with a drug, because you can now do a television commercial. Are you suffering from limerence? Oh,
yeah.
What are the three symptoms? Yes. Okay. Infatuation. Yes, you've got that. Crystallization. Whoa, you've got that. And soon you're going to be heading for deterioration. We have just the pill for you. Oh, yes. Carlton Eastlake. Not a five-star hotel, but Carlton Eastlake has discovered the pill for you. You're going to make a fortune.
I mean, I actually think that they had to teach about limerence in high school, which certainly disrupted much of my high school life. And they don't teach about it. They at least had to sign this novel so people have a little bit of an orderly experience of it safely, vicariously, before they re-encounter it in real life, because it is so disruptive. And, you know, as you're joking quite insightfully, because it is a drug, it is a real process that's profound inside our mind. And you probably could make a drug that would trigger it and make a drug that would block it, and it'd be a race to see which drug made more money.
Yeah, well, you know, you could do both. You could write the script for the TV ad, one of those ads that I click off immediately. I have to be real fast. I click off all the medical ads. I don't know why they put all those medical ads, except to give my thumb some exercise.
Yeah, does anyone watch them? I mean, we speed through them.
Oh,
they've driven us to record everything so we can skip through them.
That's what I do. I record everything. I skip. My sister is like, if you have a television show on and they have one of those ads, that is off so fast. So, but I think you could make it, as a script writer, you could make it very interesting. And I'd,
yeah,
maybe even you could do it personally. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I am an expert in limerence.
Well, you know, in this book, of course, he spends quite a bit of time trying to avoid all sorts of obnoxious, you know, creation of obnoxious media, and also then gets stuck in this hotel room, very depressed and longing after this girl and consuming ever worse media as he sits there. So this really is sort of the universal experience.
Well, it's so much fun reading about what a scriptwriter goes through, the mental process of, yes, having to deal with people telling you what to do and how to do it and what it's an experience that people can discover simply by reading this book without actually going through the suffering.
You know, and they talk about that in the book, that the good role of media, the beneficial role of writing a novel or writing a good television show, is that people can learn, can experience emotionally, not learn intellectually, but have the emotional experience of doing something and have that experience safely, but sort of retune their life, reshape their own needs, their own emotions. And, you know, you're absolutely right. So that is the whole point of for me, that is the whole point of writing and reading novels, is not just to have a pure, fun adventure, though hopefully this novel gives that to you. I mean, they're cruising up the space coast with and watching rocket launches, but it also does give you real substance, and that's what I always tried to do on television when I had the power to do it, and that's what I try to do in this novel, too. So it's a full meal, not just, you know, candy.
Yeah, exactly. I had three of my spec scripts optioned, and they appeared in the Hollywood Reporter, and I was young, and I believe they're still turning around out there. But actually, one of them was optioned three times.
Yeah,
so, you know, in those days, they were optioned three times, and so I had money, but I am on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of Hollywood, probably because I talk back to people a lot. Some of these...
You do not want to talk back to Chairman Mao. That's part of the appearance of Mao in this novel when he, you know, the answer, anthropologist assigns him the biography of Mao to read because she thinks dealing with these producers, he really ought to be clued in how these guys operate, and Mao is the best example. Yeah, you do not want to talk back to them. And of course, as you saw, there are scenes where he doesn't talk back to them. He's accused of talking back to them because he says nothing. So they assume that he's suppressing talking back and attack him anyway.
Oh, it's so good. I enjoyed the book so much on so many levels. And, of course, particularly the level of being in... So you came actually to Florida. You came out of Hollywood and you came over to Florida, you know, and actually visited us.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I lived in Florida off and on. I produced... I was co-exec producer of a very expensive television show in Florida at Universal Studios, Sequest, which was Spielberg's first really big-budget television show. And so I was co-exec, and I would rotate down to cover things. I was not living there full-time in a hotel like this character, though that certainly could have happened. And although none of these events particularly happened on that shoot, though, that was lovely. I mean, I could have set this in other places that I had shot, like in Paris or Vancouver or Sydney, Australia. But Florida was the most pleasant place to set it, exotic and yet accessible to the audience. And so that's why I picked Florida, since I was familiar with it from shooting there.
And also now, when they option the book, right?
Yes.
Now, finally, I think what you did here, you have a great opening scene. So I think it's just perfect for, well, we're going to get you on streaming video, right?
I don't know. Are we?
I think so. I think we'll go ahead and try to push it because, you know, after all, I think that, you know, you deserve it. After all of this time, I think you deserve to really have a, I don't know if a major motion picture. I think I'd this would be more fun on streaming video, something that actually a square that we'd want to click on because I think it will be fun.
I think it actually would be great streaming video. And as you know from reading the book, that if they did it, then they'd probably try to duplicate Florida in Australia's Gold Coast.
Yes, I was thinking about
that. How they managed to convince themselves to do that.
Well, it is so much fun to talk to you because, as I said, it brought back a lot of wonderful memories for me. We were in 2008. We had already we were starting pre-production for the film that I wrote for Debbie Reynolds. It was going to be shot at Fantasy of Flight, Exit 44 on the way to Orlando, and of course that's when the stock market crashed. And all of our investors crashed.
Oh, yeah.
And so everything went down the tubes in 2008. It was just tragic because, of course, it was written for her, you know, and she was here. She had been here for pre-production, and then we were going to start shooting in December. And then that horrible, horrible month where everything in the world collapsed. But anyway, you brought back a lot of fond memories for me with this book. It's called Monkey Business by Carlton Eastlake. And you have a website you want people to go to?
Oh, yes. It's Carlton Eastlake. So it's C-A-R-L-E-T-O-N. There's an E in the middle there. Eastlake, E-A-S-T-L-A-K-E .com.
Well, of course, there's
a website. Yeah, it has links around the world. You can buy this book really on any service anywhere in the world, and don't forget your independent bookstore.
Exactly. And anybody who who has Mao in his, I love it because one of my favorite books is John Holliday's Mao book. All of the clever stuff that you threw in there. You threw in a lot of your intelligence. All of that, all of those years of study paid off in this book, and I think it'll be a wonderful, wonderful. Let's get a streaming video going on this. I think it'll be lots of fun.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, it's been a joy to talk to you, and I will always think of you if I ever decide, if I get rich, and then I decide to open a 5-star hotel. It's going to be called Carlton on Eastlake. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Take care now. It was great talking to you. Monkey business.
You.
And Carlton's full of monkey business. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. What fun. Oh, I had so much fun reading this book. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. The days of, well, I can't tell you. Television production is actually so, so much fun. It when you're involved in it, you're having a ball. Of course, when you're out of it, you're out of it. Sometimes you get blacklisted in Hollywood, and it's really hard to get back. Anyway, oh my goodness, it's almost time. Big Ed's playing the music. Big Ed, I thank you so much, and I'm so happy we got Carlton. Say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed. He held on for Carlton. Everybody, bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rock